Our handle is making_contact on Twitter, and on Instagram, we're Making Contact Radio Project. I'm Salima Hamarani. Thank you for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, we're talking with Clackamas Community College Associate Faculty President Christopher Zimmerly Beck and past president Mary Jean Williams. Welcome to Labor Radio, Christopher and Mary Jean.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to talk to you all.
CCCAF, a local of the Oregon Education Association, represents instructors at Clackamas Community College and is in the midst of a contract fight. First, tell us about the work you do at the college. What do you teach, and what is it like to teach at the community college level?
So I teach communication studies, which means a lot of public speaking. I also enjoy teaching interpersonal communication, which is anything that involves face-to-face. And then also workplace communication for the vocational technical programs, so people know how to get along and get stuff done together on the job. It's exciting work. I love the community college population because people come from very different life stages and backgrounds and perspectives. And it means that our students get to learn a lot from each other. And it's my job to empower a rich learning environment, to empower a lot of different kinds of learning styles, and to make them feel safe sharing their huge variety of life experiences with each other. A big part of being an educated person is getting to know perspectives that you would never know beyond yourself and your kin. And so putting that diversity in the classroom to work as an education tool takes a lot of skill in classroom management and sensitivity and responsiveness to a variety of learning styles. Christopher, you want to share your observations as an English teacher?
Sure. So I'm Christopher Zimmerly-Beck, and I teach in the English department at Clackamas Community College. And honestly, I absolutely love it. I have amazing colleagues, and my students are just incredible. It's community college. They're like colleges for the working class. They're colleges for people who want to get an education, but who also, you know, work and balance family lives and are taking care of relatives and parents and all of that. I find the diversity that Mary Jean mentioned in the classroom to be very exciting. And it's a public institution, which to me means it has an important civic role in our communities and our society as a whole. And the thing that I'm most interested in about community colleges is that there's a collision between the humanities and fostering critical thought and those sort of like liberal arts values with the sort of economic realities of being working class today and needing to get a skill or a trade or that sort of thing. I think of community colleges as both schools of critical inquiry and economic engines in our communities. And it's really wonderful to get to work in a atmosphere like that. And then the other thing I'll say is I'm a product of community colleges. You know, I went to a public high school in East Portland. It's basically a C student. And it was really in the community colleges that I learned to find my voice, to engage with texts, and to really think of myself as someone capable of making a difference in other people's life, being able to think critically about the world and have an impact on the world. To me, community colleges are really central to educating a working class that is able to begin to think for itself, act for itself, all of those things. So I just love community colleges. And I have really awesome colleagues in my department and around the college. So love community college.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I teach community college too. I'm an instructor at PCC, and I love my job, love the students. Community college is awesome.
Totally.
Thank you, you three. What does it mean to be associate faculty? What's the difference between associate faculty and other instructors? Are you part-time? Do you have tenure?
So yeah. Being associate faculty is kind of like being a Marine. We're the rapid deployment force for the college. We are the last to know and the first to go. We may not know if our classes are going to enroll enough until just a few days before school begins. And we have to be ready to hit the ground running. It requires an enormous amount of adaptability and just energy to be that responsive. We're hired on a term-by-term basis, so we have no job security whatsoever. And yet more than half of us, and there are at any given time between 300 and 369 associate faculty members at Clackamas right now, more than half of us have been working for the college for between 5 and 20 years in this permanently temporary status. And yet there's no job security. We top out fairly quickly in on the pay scale. And we make roughly at best half of what our full-time colleagues make when prorated for the same workload. So it's definitely a labor of love, but you know, people have to pay their bills too. And we're facing rent increases of over 14% potentially in the next year. We've seen inflation of over 7% in the last year. And we've finally gotten from management a serious wage proposal, but it's still less than the inflation that we've experienced in the last year. So it's very hard for associate faculty to get a toehold in any kind of pay equity. We're not done fighting, but we're excited that the administration is finally engaged in the conversation about wages.
When I think about the difference between associate faculty, which at other colleges are sometimes called part-time or adjunct, that sort of thing. When I think of the difference between associate faculty and tenure faculty, the most important thing I hope people understand is for the student in the classroom, there is no difference. They receive the same education regardless of whether or not they have a tenured teacher or a associate faculty part-time teacher. The difference is that we are paid, as Mary Jean said, half as much as our tenured peers. It's a very disruptive dynamic that is perpetuated by the administration and the Board of Education, and really the state of Oregon. This is a problem that exists all across the state and all across the country, that we're supposed to just be okay with working for less, even though we're doing the same amount of work.
Right. You say this is a problem across the country, and yes, over the last few decades, we've seen the adjunctification of higher education, meaning there has been a dramatic shift in the proportion of instructors who are adjunct or contingent or non-tenure or part-time, although in the case of Clackamas Community College, associate faculty aren't even part-time. But in whatever you call them, these instructors have less job security and lower wages than their tenured or full-time counterparts, among other differences, as you've alluded to. So why has this shift occurred? And why is it bad for teachers, students, and unions?
Well, it happened probably because of the invention of the MBA, the Masters of Business Administration. So you get a bunch of business people up in administration who know diddly squat about what it means to run a classroom or empower learning. And they've got their heads up their balance sheets with no conception for what it's like to live the mission of the college. And so the culture gap between administration and faculty gets wider and wider. And all they're looking for are ways to cut costs so the boards will pay them bigger bonuses. In other words, they're earning higher pay at our expense. So it's just a gross mismatch of mission, and it's hurtful. Not to mention being grossly unfair to our students because of the wedges it drives through the institutions.
I think Mary Jean's absolutely right that there are trends in education which put administration interests and ultimately business interests in the community and in society at large ahead of the interests of, first and foremost, our students, and then secondary to that, us faculty who are in the classroom. I think it's fascinating to me that education is more expensive than it has ever been in the history of this country. And educators like Mary Jean and myself are paid, you know, per dollar adjusted for inflation, all of those caveats, like less than we've ever been in our profession. There is an unbalance of power in academia, in higher ed, but also in education across the board, in K-12 education as well. And, you know, it's also not lost on me that these trends began, really they start in like the 70s and going through the 80s, really in response to a union upsurge in the 70s, student activism in the 70s, that all of a sudden education becomes a lot more expensive. And the administration suddenly has a lot more power in the governance of our institutions. I really see that as part of what, you know, people call it the employer's offensive or neoliberalism. Naomi Klein often refers to this sort of thing as the shock doctrine. And I think those are the sort of the things that are happening at Clackamas Community College on a very small scale are represented by those sort of larger social and political and economic phenomenon that happen really across the country.
Thank you, Christopher. So you're currently in contract negotiations with Clackamas Community College. And so what are your main demands?
Well, we very much need to make headway on wage equity. 1 year I filled in full time for my colleague who was on sabbatical. That year I made $44,000 to her $80,000. So that's just not right for the same work. So
the things that I talked about when I talk with my colleagues is really about pay equity, which is the same pay for the same work, meeting inflation, at least trying to minimize the impacts of inflation. And then to go back to Laura's last comment, we had a really heated bargaining meeting a couple of months ago where we rejected a proposal that management had given us over wages, and management countered and said, well, we're gonna go look at what the other community colleges in the area are paying. And I told our college vice president, I was like, feel free, please go look at what the other community colleges are paying, but I need you to understand that we're not just raising the bar to be on par with Mount Hood Community College or Clark Community College or PCC. We are fighting 40 years, four decades of degradation of our profession, and we are fighting for the heart of our profession. And in order to do that, you need to compensate us fairly. And so we've really raised the stakes at our college and are hoping that we can begin to model how higher ed educators around the state of Oregon can begin to collaborate together and can begin to really set a pattern at the bargaining table that we're able to say no, we're able to hold out, and we're able to get a raise that actually helps us, that is something that we can be proud of, that we can show our families, and that can have a meaningful impact in our lives.
Yes. Many of my coworkers in higher ed are interested in exactly that, coordinating across institutions to advocate for. Like you say, we're fighting for the heart of our profession.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. We're listening to Christopher Zimmerly Beck and Mary Jean Williams of the Clackamas Community College Associate Faculty.
So what have you been doing at the bargaining table and in mobilizing your members to win your demands?
Oh, this is the fun part. Oh, Christopher and I are having a blast. We have gotten our act together and taken it on the road. We've been knocking on doors all summer, talking to our members, signing up members wherever we are. But now that we've been virtual colleges for the last couple of years, we've really gotten better at these distributed communication skills. Zoom is working for us. doing contract negotiations on Zoom means that it's easier for more people to come in and observe. And I'm losing my throat. Christopher, tell them about the participation
Sure.
we're getting.
Yeah, so we've, first I'll say the negative things. The Janus Supreme Court decision, which I'm sure listeners of this show know about, on top of the pandemic and the nature of our job, our membership is not in a good place. We are not the strongest union. We don't have 100% membership. So we recognized that in order to win a strong contract, first and foremost, it's all hands on deck. We have to raise this membership. So we've been doing everything from just improving our communications to make sure that you members know what we're up to, to, as Mary Jean said, going out on doors, doing worksite visits as well, really spent the summer trying to talk to as many members as we can. And to me, that's the most fun part of being in a union. I want to talk to my coworkers. I want to have those one-on-one conversations. I want to find those issues that are both widely and deeply felt and make a plan to act on them.
I live for that stuff. What we've tried to do is avoid table games. We've tried to say we're not going to win by putting across the smartest proposal or by tricking management into something. Instead, we're going to do open bargaining. So it's on Zoom, as Mary Jane said. We invite all of our coworkers. We also invite our tenure peers, and we invite our classified peers. Basically, everyone who works at the college that's not an administrator, please come to our bargaining meeting. Come support us. When we caucus, which is like the meetings without management to talk about proposals, we invite all of those people to give us their feedback. Their feedback is valued just as much as the actual official five members of the bargaining team. And then the other area that we've started to do really since the spring is get serious about contract enforcement. We are filing grievances on any contract violation. If it's a contract violation, it's a grievance, unless the college will remedy it. We have a unfair labor practice right now that has nine alleged, I'll say alleged because the ERB hasn't ruled on it yet, nine alleged violations of labor law against our employer for blocking our access to new members, not fulfilling information requests, things like that. And I think we've just been starting to get really good at operating on all fronts, trying to get more people involved, enforcing the contract, and really trying to create a culture of democracy that it's not my union, it's not Mary Jean's union, and it's not that our bargaining team is going to win you a good contract. It's what can we all do together to draw the line in the sand and defend our profession. What can we all do to draw a line in the sand and defend our profession and move forward collectively? And it's starting to work. Like, the administration is starting to realize they have to deal with us and collaborate with us.
Our next question: how has the administration responded to this new burst of mobilization and energy in your ranks?
Frankly, they didn't seem to get very serious until the observers got mad. They started putting some really angry and frustrated things in the chat, and it seemed to rattle them. And they came back and got all righteous, indignant, oh, about community agreements. Wait a minute, members of the public are not subject to community agreements. And as a matter of fact, we never signed those because they were sexist, and that's a whole nother story. But a little anger seemed to activate them to get serious about bringing serious proposals. And the last two negotiating sessions were actually far more substantive. We've got a shot, perhaps, of closing negotiations without having to go to mediation for the first time in a number of contracts. It's been real interesting to see that happen, that when people have a chance to show their frustration, that seems to help forward the negotiations.
Yeah, just to go off of what Mary Jean was saying, these open bargaining, I hope any listener here, if they take one thing away, it's like, embrace open bargaining, having people in the room, having your members in the room. If you are upset about the frustrations that members are articulating in these meetings, you need to wrap up negotiations. You need to come to us with a good faith proposal. Within a week of that, we also filed that really large unfair labor practice I was mentioning earlier. And then just this week, we had a rally at the school board where we rallied outside of the school board, Board of Education. We had lots of chants. My favorite chant was, if we don't teach, students don't learn. If administrators don't Zoom, because all they ever do is go to Zoom meetings. If administrators don't Zoom, students still learn. And we were chanting that outside of the Board of Education meeting. And then we didn't go to the Board of Ed meeting. We all walked off. We said, they're disrespecting us. We're not gonna give them our time. And I think it was a combination of that. It was a combination of our members being really angry. It was a combination of the unfair labor practices and grievances we've been filing, and the school beginning to see us mobilize on campus in a way that I don't know that they've been used to, certainly not since before the pandemic, that forced them to bring us an economic proposal that we're interested in. It still has problems. It doesn't keep up with inflation. We haven't settled our contract yet, but it is a hopeful turn of events. But I think it's directly because of that organizing we're doing.
Clackamas Community College is a public institution governed by an elected board of education, which is not exactly the same, but is sort of connected to management and executives. So what role does the elected board play in labor negotiations?
They are so out of touch with negotiations. What we've experienced this last year is, you know, administration submitted to them a balanced budget with a decent surplus. And the board arbitrarily said, you need to cut $2 million out of this. You know, the federal subsidies are going away. You know, just to be on the safe side, we would like you to, you know, cut off your left hand, basically. You know, we've really seen our board of directors working against competent budgeting and sustainable budgeting practices. We have on campus a budget advisory group that ostensibly includes representative stakeholders across the college. But honestly, they're in this committee of dozens of people, 90% of them are administrators. And I believe there's only 3 or 4 faculty members on this budget advisory group. And they pretty much function as the uh-oh squad. Uh-oh, we have to cut $2 million out of the budget for the next 3 years. Uh-oh. And we go through this continuously, and it's been that way since the college was founded in 1966. What we need is a budgeting process that automatically expands and contracts based on known change factors. Yes, enrollment changes. Associate faculty already absorb all that risk, the enrollment risk, because we're the last to know and the first to go. The state funding is not stable, and we get allocations from them only a few years at a time. But the thing is, all of those uncertainties are predictable. And if we had a values-based budgeting process, we wouldn't have to traumatize ourselves every 12, 14, 18 months with a, uh-oh, we have to cut another $1 million. So we can get better as an institution at competent budgeting, even in the face of expanding and contracting funds. So I don't think the board is doing us any favors in the practices that they engage in. They're out of touch with us as faculty members and as a college. And they pretty much just tell the administration arbitrarily, you know, jump through these hoops, and they're really kind of detached from reality.
We're kind of running low on time here, but I did want to ask this question. You don't have to take a lot of time to answer it, but you may not want to answer it completely, but what are your plans to escalate pressure on the college? And here I'm bringing up the S word, of course. Are you thinking about striking?
So what I would say is I really believe in, you know, democratic union organizing, and my members are committed to getting the contract they deserve. We haven't even gone to arbitration yet. So we have a long way to go still to get the strong contract that our members are telling us they want, but certainly nothing is off of the table. We've marched on the school board. I think now that the school year is starting, we are going to be being a very loud and visible presence on our campuses. We're going to be talking to our students so that they are informed about what is going on. And honestly, in my studies of labor history, I have always learned that the best way to prevent a strike is to organize and have a strike prepared. And I think, OHSU just settled a contract. I don't think they've ratified yet, but it looks like it's a pretty good deal. And I know that they
had authorized a strike and that they had to do that to get to where they're at. We are prepared to do whatever it takes to get our members the contract they deserve, as long as our members are with us and are moving with us. So I'm certainly not going to say we're planning to go on strike yet, but I will say a strike is not off the table, nor are informational pickets, mobilizing community members and faith leaders. You know, it's all of the above for us. I think what's important for me is that our members are the ones that are driving that. Well, we're sort of providing the options and structure to help them achieve the goals that they have. And then the last thing I'll say is, I don't think educators should be afraid to strike. You know, I look to the Chicago Teachers Union and our comrades in California. They really show us that it is often in our students' interest to strike, that if we want to secure high wages and quality, you know, learning conditions for our students, strikes are part of how we as working class people achieve that. And that's definitely something that is not lost on us. And we hope that our administration and Board of Education understand that too, that we are serious about getting organized and not making empty threats. But when we flex our muscle, we want them to know that it's a real, real possibility.
Fantastic. Well, how can our listeners help and keep in touch with your struggle?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think continue to be on the lookout for announcements for future mobilizations, community mobilizations, that sort of thing. We're such a small union, we currently don't have a huge social media presence that I can direct you towards. But I would say just folks that are especially already involved in the labor movement, just keep your ears out. And then honestly, I think the best thing any working class person can be doing to help us is to be getting your own workplace organized, to be getting your own school organized, to be getting your own union in fighting shape. That's really what I see that our project is. We're getting our union into fighting shape. And the more you're able to fight